This is the Stamfords podcast at the Stamfords Travel Writers Festival at Destinations in Olympia.
He has a better waistcoat than me, and he's brought a Phoebe Smith with him. Please welcome to the stage, Sean Conway.
Hello, Sean.
Hello,
everyone. Yes.
Thank you very much, everyone.
This is the fanciest living room we've probably ever sat in.
This is amazing. I want this map.
Thank you, everyone, for coming today and it's Saturday as well. I've lost complete track of time. To hear about Sean and his slightly wacky, I think you wouldn't mind me saying, adventurous life. She sounds like a wonderful woman. So obviously, we're talking about Sean, who's got a new book, which is Running Britain, which is nicely placed on here for us. But
Phoebe's got a book too, as well. It's probably better than mine, if I'm honest.
I doubt very much. But the running, and we're talking, you guys have seen some of Sean's pictures kind of whizzing by, so we might sometimes dip in and out of them. But Sean's run, which was basically running the length of Britain.
Yeah.
From John O'Groats to Land's End, was actually the end of a series of slightly wacky adventures that became the biggest triathlon you could think of. Tell us about that.
So 10 years ago, I didn't have any money, and I wanted to go on holiday. I was self-employed, and I always sort of gave myself April off. So I had a whole month and about 500 quid. I thought, well, what can I do? And I thought of, and someone said, oh, why don't you do Land's End to John O'Groats, cycle. I was like, oh, that sounds fun. At the same time, I heard about the Land's End to John O'Groats cycling world record. At the time, Gethin Butler, he'd done it in 2 days, just under 2 days, which is phenomenal, 900 miles in under 2 days. So I thought, oh, I wonder how close I can get to Gethin Butler's record.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew I wasn't going to break it because I didn't own a bicycle, but I thought, I'll get a bike on eBay and go down to Land's End and cycle Land's
End. How good a cyclist were you at this point?
Oh, terrible. I cycled. I had a BMX as a kid. That was about it.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I was 28 years old. I thought, right, this is going to be my first thing. Set off as fast as I could. A little bit slower than 2 days. It took me 25 days.
Just a little bit off the record.
Yeah, a little bit. But what it did is it made me fall in love with this idea of Land's End to John O'Groats. Honestly, Britain is the best island in the world, and doing Land's End to John O'Groats just really restores your faith in humanity. You know, people are... I put my bike up outside a cafe and go for food and come back and someone would have left 50p on the seat, you know.
Aww.
Not a quid, 50p. and it just really restores your faith in humanity. So I just fell in love with it. And then I started researching all the different people who've done Land's End to John O'Groats. And it's amazing. There's a guy called David Sullivan who hit a golf ball. there's a woman, Rosie May, who pushed a bed in her pajamas, slept in the bed. Imagine that on the A30.
That's kind of a good idea, though.
In a lay-by.
It's amazing. Yeah.
You know, And people have just done it. Mimi Anderson, the female running record, is 12 days.
Yeah.
And if you work out the maths, that's 3 marathons a day.
Wow.
For 12 days. You know, absolutely amazing. And she was nearly 50 years old. She might have even been 50 when she did. You know, it's absolutely
incredible. When did she do it? How long ago was that? Do you remember?
Oh, God. I mean, it's years ago now. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be 10 years ago. I was just going online and just getting inspired by all these people.
Yeah.
So fast forward to 2013. I was looking to try and become the fastest person to swim it, thinking someone's surely swum Land's End to John O'Groats because, you know, someone's hit a golf ball.
Yeah, and rolled a bat.
Yeah, exactly. and bigger swims have been done. You know, people have swum the Amazon, across the Atlantic and this sort of thing. And then soon found out that no one had swum the length of Britain in 2013.
How long is the length of Britain swimming?
The swim is about 900 miles
because
you're cutting across.
Yeah.
Except one guy. There was a guy who put a swimming pool on the back of a van and did lengths as they drove it. He's technically swum it, yeah.
Was it heated?
I have no idea. It must have been, yeah.
I'd have had it heated.
Fill up with fuel and water at every service. So I did that. I mean, that was a phenomenally difficult swim, especially back in 2013. You know, everyone thought it was impossible.
How strong a swimmer were you?
Yeah.
When you did that?
I knew how to swim. I don't want to sort of lie to people.
You didn't learn to swim.
I didn't learn how to swim. Of course, I knew how to swim.
But similar to the bike.
But I was
woefully
unfit.
You weren't like a champion swimmer.
My first day, I swam a mile and got so seasick, I had to take 3 days off after that.
Wow, okay, yeah.
I was trying to raise money for War Child, and actually no media came to Land's End because they just thought they were wasting their time.
Yeah.
As soon as they heard out I was seasick, everyone was there, the one show. It was great. We raised loads of money for charity that day. Anyway, that took 4.5 months, finished the swim, and then I sort of thought, right, I'm done, you know, that's it. And then I got home and all my friends were like, well, you know, you have to do the run now. And I was like, oh. And then I was like, wait, I get to pretend to be Forrest Gump for a month. So anyone with a beard who's into running will get what I mean. And I actually attempted it once. So in 2014, I tried to do it. But
can we mention the selfie
harm?
Yeah,
I know. I got injured taking a selfie and tripped over. So that was pretty embarrassing.
And was it which... So, it was one of the newspapers called it selfie
harm. Yeah, the Sun newspaper printed like almost a whole page on me, which is very embarrassing. I think it's almost my most successful YouTube video. It's for me stacking it. And that's when I just thought, right, well, you know, I want to finish this first ever Length of Britain triathlon,
yeah,
which I'd started years and years before. It was never going to be this big challenge to start off with because, truthfully, I never believed I could do that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of evolved. And, you know, when you do something and you achieve it and you get a bit better at it, you push yourself up and you do something else. And then that's only when the big triathlon came. And that's why I went back on attempt number 2 after recovering for 6 months.
Yeah.
To have another crack.
And I think it's safe to say, similar to both the cycling and the swimming, it wasn't like you were this expert runner, professional runner either.
No. I've never run a marathon. In fact, I'm running my first marathon this year. I'm doing London Marathon this year for the Scouts.
Wow. Oh, amazing.
And I mean, I've obviously done the distance, but pretty slowly. But I've never actually entered a running race in my life. So the first running event I ever did, other than cross country at school, was running the Length of Britain. But I was doing it slowly. I also actually wanted to see over a period of a month how your body would change. So on day one, I did sort of 11 miles and nearly died. And it was self-supported as well, so I was carrying a rucksack with tent, sleeping bag and everything.
Yeah.
By the end, I was doing nearly a double marathon. It's amazing. So within 40 days, your body...
It just adapts.
..can adapt. It's incredible, the human body. You know?
And one of the things that you talk about in the book with that was because you were self-supported and carrying everything you needed, food was quite a big issue. There was obviously the weight involved with food that you buy, money, because you were on a budget as well. And there was an incident I remember very clearly, both in the book and seeing it when, because it was on TV, when you actually ate dog food in an attempt to get protein. So what does dog food taste like?
I have, in my mind, I'm always trying to do maths and calculations on the amount of protein I need a day, which is around 130 grams, the amount of calories. And then also on top of that, how expensive, you know, how cheap can I get that protein?
Yeah.
And I was going through the supermarket and I was looking at chicken and beef, which is all around 23, 25 grams of protein per 100 grams. And then I passed some Pedigree dog food. Other brands of dog food are available, which had 28 grams of protein. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I was like, can you actually eat dog food? So it had the helpline number. So I sort of phoned them and I was like, hi. I'd like to eat some of your dog food. Can I? And he's like, please hold. And then he came back to me, and you can see he's just reading it off his own website. Our food is cooked to a temperature safe for human consumption. And he went totally off script. He just said, but just don't do it, mate. But it was amazing. For a pound, you get a whole bag, a quid. And it was like 50 grams of protein for a pound. It tasted disgusting.
I was going to say, how did it taste?
Yeah, horrible. It took me like 4 days to finish it.
Oh, my goodness.
But I thought it was bad karma just throwing away dog food. And it's a bit weird walking up to someone else's dog and giving them treats in the middle of the park.
People probably wouldn't accept it.
Yeah.
But even though we say you were doing this, you know, you were by yourself, you were self-supported, you did have a little friend with you, your little running mascot.
Yeah, and the little flying cow, which is my
he's not actually
mascot.
A cow, it's a bull.
He's a bull. Yeah, he's a bull. So when I did Land's End John O'Groats, you know, I probably did the first video ever on Facebook. It was before even videos were a thing on Facebook. And I went to a charity shop and bought 3 mascots. Tigger the Tiger, a little hedgehog, and this little flying cow. And I put a video out and said to my 7 friends back then, which one should I take cycling the Length of Britain? And the cow won. So I had it on my handlebars. And ever since, this cow has just been all around the world with me. I think the cow's been to 46 countries or something now. I should have got him a passport.
Doesn't he have his own social media account as well?
He's Adventure Mascot on Instagram.
And you even quote him in your book. He actually speaks to you and goads you a little bit, doesn't he?
I mean, my cow is obviously just my alter ego in my mind. You know, I have 2 very distinct parts of my brain. One's very... logical, very sort of, I know how much protein, carbs, sleep, salt, you know, I'm very analytical on some side. And then on the other side, I'm just this weird, hairy running guy who talks to his cow at every opportunity. So, but it kind of makes me make fun of it, you know.
Especially when he puts on accents. I particularly liked it when he pretended to be Scottish.
Well, and yeah, he does, exactly. But I think it's, for me, it's important not to take it too seriously. I think, you know, if you take it too seriously, for me in particular, it's kind of going against the whole reason why you wanted to do it in the first place. Yes, have the big goal, but be a bit spontaneous, you know. Like when I was running down the Midlands, my friend Matt in Wales said, mate, why are you not running Britain and not coming to Wales? I was like, fair point. So I just diverted into Wales. And
you said the longest run to go meet a Welshman for a pint.
Yeah, the furthest run. I ran 44 miles to have a pint with a Welshman. My mate Matt actually used to be in that TV show Dirty Sanchez, remember?
The Welsh jackass.
So having a lock-in with him resulted in us... The pub stayed open just for me and him until 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
But the landlord went to bed at 3:30 and just gave us a piece of paper and said, whatever you drink, just write it down. Matt was straight over the bar with having Guinness and wine glasses, because why not?
But interestingly, on that particular night in your book, you talk about a guy who came to see you who hitchhiked all the way from
Julien,
France.
Julien. So I've got a really interesting story about him. So I'm running. I've woken up at 8 o'clock with 3 hours sleep. I'm doing a marathon with Matt and his dog Lemmy to Bristol. And I get back to the River Severn, and there's this French guy, super excited. Sean. I was like, whoa, okay. Crazy French guy, who are you? He's like, I've just hitchhiked from France to run with you. I was like, wow, how long did it take you? Like 3 days. And then he's like, I went to the wrong bridge. So, you know, there's two River Severn bridges. And he went to the one you have to drive on. But obviously I was running down the other one. And then he's like, I was at the wrong bridge, so I just ran in the road and stopped an old couple, and they took me here. And imagine this French guy just running in the road, and this elderly couple like, okay, I'll take you to the other bridge. But he was an absolutely amazing guy, you know, and he ran, and he just had this rubbish rucksack and not the best kit, and he ran for 2 days with me.
Wow.
And then eventually he's like, I need to hitchhike home. And 3 days later he sent me a tweet saying, I'm back home. But what's more interesting is I then, a few years later, I did the world's longest triathlon, the 4,200-mile triathlon around Britain.
Yeah.
And I think only a few months ago, it inspired him to try and beat that record. So he just beat my record a few months ago.
He just did it.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Well, in your book, you're very kind and you say, I'm going to help him. I want him to beat my
record.
Yeah, totally.
So he actually eventually, he did do it. I don't think, when I was writing that, he was still
You said, I hope by the time I'm finished that he's
beat. So he did it around France and it was amazing. Yeah, he's such a good guy.
Well, and you mentioned that about human kindness and that doing this has really got you to realise that, you know, 99% of the world are good, and there's just 1% who are bad that we hear so much about.
I mean, Russell Howard. I was on Russell Howard's Good News years ago, where instead of being calm and sophisticated, I just pretended to be a pigeon in front of. Where, you know, can anyone do the?
That's
you know,
very
so
good.
I was like, oh, brilliant. Anyway, he famously said, you know, the world is just polar opposites. On the one side, people are saying, we've got a button to blow up the world. And on the other side, there's people going, what should we call female fishermen? And the rest of us in the middle just want to live our lives. But that's the bit that doesn't make the news, right?
So,
it's when you go out and do these things that you realize we're all in this middle 98, 99%.
Yeah.
We just want to make friends, travel, laugh, earn a living, go to, you know...
Have a good time.
Exactly, and that sort of thing. So... Yeah, and it restores your faith in humanity, especially in Britain, because I thought it's the best island in the world.
Well, that's it, because in the book, you know, some people might think, oh, is it just an account of running and pain?
No.
And there is a little tiny bit of that in it. But actually, it's almost slightly a bit of a love letter to Britain, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Because you're noticing the, you know, the little pub culture.
Yeah.
I wrote down a note that it's almost... a lot of it is poo to pub, to poo to pub.
There's a lot of poo talking. I did have a lot of issues with my bowels, I'm not going to lie. I had a thing called runner's gut, which I won't go into detail, but...
I think you can use your imagination to what that is.
Yeah, and it's when you have too many calories and it's the wrong calories and you're running around and it creates this toxic in your body.
Yeah.
It actually can be quite dangerous. You can die. Severe cases can lead to death, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah.
Although I'm convinced, you know, you're running down into traffic, obviously, so you can see cars coming. And on some of the roads, you've got these big, you know, there's roadkill everywhere. And I'm convinced some dead roadkill landed up in my mouth from a passing truck spraying me, but you know, could have been anything, to be honest.
No, but the pubs then became your little kind of haven with when, because you know you're very honest and you say when you've been feeling down doing this and you're just in a lot of pain. And, you know, you would treat yourself and be like, do you know what, I'm going to spend a night in a bed in this place. I'm going to treat myself to this double dinner. I love the double dinner. It's such a great idea. Like, why just have one? I'm going to have
dinners,
two.
Why not?
And the combinations that you recommend.
Everyone would say, oh, do you want to wait for the other person? No.
No, they're both mine.
Yeah, they're both
mine. I absolutely love it.
I mean, I purposefully wanted, I sort of saved for this and had a proper budget. You know, I think my budget was 50 quid a day.
Okay.
Which is huge. You know, I've done a walk in Britain on fiver a day. So once I tried to walk from Cheltenham, where my mum lives, to London for a New Year's Eve party a few years ago, for cheaper than the train. The train was £48.50 or whatever. I thought, well, if I walk a marathon a day, it'll give me 8 quid a day budget. And actually, I soon found out that you can live on a fiver a day. So £1 for a bag of...
not dog food.
Pasta. No, not for dog food. £1 for a bag of pasta, £2 for a chorizo stick, and another £2 for a bit of pesto, and you just boil it up, which meant I had like £3.07 left. So every night I'd walk into the pub and be like, can I have £3.07 worth of pint, worth of ale, please? You know, in Cheltenham it was a pint. Here it was a half pint, but...
Of course. Increasingly less.
So I purposely didn't want to do the sort of camping, cooking my own thing, because I think in the evenings, when you travel on your own, you invite people to come and talk to you, which is why I often travel alone. When you travel, even in pairs, I've done some pairs traveling. People kind of leave you alone, you know, if you're sitting in a bar
and
or
you're
a pub,
in a bubble,
because you're in your own little bubble.
And like you said, and you say this in the book, you know, it's wonderful to go into. I love nothing better than going into a pub, sitting there, and the number of people you can meet, the stories you can hear, and you can hear about something else you might want to see or do. It's
there's nothing quite like it.
And solo travel is definitely on the up. I'm not surprised because
I love it, and it builds so many life skills that you need, you know, like resilience, and there's not anyone else to help you out, you know.
No.
You rather have to fix
it. But then going back to that, you also had, as well as flying Little Cow, you also had another friend, which was, and on the way here I thought, can I pick one up to make you demonstrate your massage with? So Sean travelled with a tennis ball called Wilson. Which is
the
lovely
two things I get when I just walk down the street normally is run, Forrest, run, and Wilson. So,
But actually, you had an injury, didn't you, quite early on, that this tennis ball that originally was like a funny little mascot became something you really needed.
Well, actually, so I have an issue with my right leg. I'm right leg dominant. I broke my left leg as a kid, and I think biologically I've just got used to using my right leg, which means I overuse it. And I get real tight in my abductors and my glutes and everything. And if anyone's done any tennis ball massaging, that's what I would use. And obviously I called him Wilson because why not? Wilson and I would, how do I say this, have quite intimate relations on the side of the road.
I was trying to get him
into various places on my body that probably should have been saved for a hotel room.
And you said the best place to do that is up in the north of Scotland because there's very few...
There's no one around. So you can sort of lie and, you know...
On your front,
rolling Wilson into your hip. No one will notice.
And then there's the issue about keeping clean on it. So you have, what was it called, the 2 1/4 rule?
2 1/4 rule, yeah.
So explain what the 2 1/4 rule is to everyone.
So to save weight, so for the most part, if you're doing a running adventure, you don't want to carry more than 10% of your body weight on your back because that the extra weight, your body's just not used to that increased level of weight on your knees and your hips and your ankles and things like that. You can train for it, obviously, which I didn't. I had to try and keep my rucksack. I'm only 65 kgs. So I had to keep my rucksack around 6-7 kgs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no room for spare clothing at all. So you just keep the one set on and try and wash it. So that's why I do my hotel once a week, where I'd use all the free shampoos you get and just put them in the bath or the sink. And then I'd actually put my clothes back on to let them dry overnight. On with my body heat, otherwise you're putting wet clothes on in the morning,
which isn't nice.
But I'd usually decide on this hotel night when I was sort of sitting in a pub and people would come sit next to me and I'm there and they'd be like, hey, how's it going, mate? And they'd be like and if that distance got further than 2 1/4 meters, I knew I really needed
it was time for my hotel stop. And I love the way that you kind of, because the idea, and you describe it really well actually at the beginning, when you set off and Often when you go on a big adventure, you know, it's all about the planning and you get excited and then you actually start it. And the reality in the first few minutes kind of sinks in that, oh my goodness, I have to do this now and there's not that much to do. It's actually quite boring just putting one foot in front of the other.
Well, it's true. And especially the weeks leading up to it.
Yeah.
You've got so much life admin to do, you know. I mean, stupid things like, my council tax bill is going to come while I'm gone. I'm going to prepay that. And, you know, who's going to sort out my gas and my electrics? And I had a leak, my Land Rover had a leak in the fuel tank.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to have 60 litres of fuel in the road, which the council aren't going to be too happy about. So I had to drive around the block like 50 times at full revs until I stalled.
Got rid of all this. Yeah.
Well, and then I knew, well, actually, if I've stalled now, you know, I can limp home and I'll only have 2 litres of fuel to spill all over the road. So there's all this stuff happening in the lead up, you know. And then, you know, when you get there, all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I'm just running.
Yeah.
And then it does take your mind, it takes you a few minutes to kind of go, oh.
But then I think as well the enormity of what you set yourself sinks in and you think, oh my, this is quite a long way.
Well, especially because I'm really competitive. So, you know, beforehand I'm looking at Mimi Anderson who did 3 marathons a day and in my mind I'm like, man, you know, I'm young, I'm fit, I swam Britain, I'm going to smash this. But it turns out running is just a whole different ball game.
Well, and then running through cities, I love the game that you set yourself, the
zombie chicken
to keep yourself entertained. So I'm sure we've all been these zombies that you discussed. Yeah. So tell us about zombie chicken, how it works.
I always try and make games up. So when I went cycling around the world, dogs would chase me on the bicycle. And if ever the owner didn't seem bothered about his dog chasing me, I would then try and see how far I could let the dog run away from the owner. This is very serious, because if you go too quickly, the dog gives up. And if you go too slowly, you get bitten. So eventually, you get quite good at it. So I'm always trying to look for these games. And Zombie Chicken, I remember I invented it in Preston, because I happened to run through Preston at rush hour in the morning. And, you know, I'm walking past bus stations, and people are just on their phones. Just walking around, not even looking up. So the game was, I would just keep running and see how close I would get to someone before either I, you know, chicken out, or they sort of realize, you know, what's going. I mean, I'm straight into one person.
And it was
my fault, obviously, as
of
well.
Course, yeah, you know. Of course. Did you both apologize to the British thing?
Yeah, of course. Like, oh, sorry.
But
I didn't even have a phone as an excuse. you got to keep your mind entertained, you know.
And do you, on that run, is there a section of it that stands out as the real highlight where you were like, yes, this is me, this is what I'm doing. I actually am enjoying this challenge.
Annoyingly, I ran it the wrong way around. I think if I did it again, I'd run to Scotland because I love Scotland. I live up in the Lake District just to be nearer Scotland.
Yeah.
I would live in Scotland if it wasn't for midges. and Scotland just tries to kill you all the time, for the most part.
Although you were running to meet your mum, weren't you?
Yeah.
In time for when she was free.
That is true. So it was difficult because I loved Scotland. I was trying to do as many trails as possible. So I went along the north coast instead of the A9, down through the middle, Great Glen Way, West Highland Way. And that was amazing, but I wasn't really fit. And then by the time I got really fit down in Cornwall, when I was sort of doing 40 miles a day easy, it was really busy because the summer was starting and, you know, I was running on the road and that sort of thing. So annoyingly, I think I did love Scotland, but I wish I'd kind of been a bit fitter by the time I got there.
But then I suppose doing it the way you did meant that you could have more supporters start to come out towards the end. And that's very noticeable in the book, that you go from it's very much you in the middle of nowhere, the odd car, the odd person, you know, that you see having these conversations, to suddenly people arriving. It's quite emotional, I think, when the people arrive.
Oh, it's great. And again, it's why I'm keep drawn back to adventuring in Britain, because, you know, you're running along and you people know what you talk about when you say, oh, I've just run Birmingham to Worcester on the canal, and people are like, wow, no way, I've cycled there, oh my God, you know, and you have real conversations, whereas, you know, stuff I've done around the world, you know, you come back and you go, oh, you know, I cycled from Sydney to Darwin. Most people are like, huh? Show me a map.
Yeah,
it's 3,000 miles out, by the way. It's more impressive than running Birmingham to Worcester, for sure.
Yeah, it's like you said, they just can't kind of picture.
Yeah, so it's heartwarming, you know, doing these things. And you know, because it was live tracked online, people could come and join me and run with me and that sort of thing. And
just describe for us, like, what that moment was like when you got to the end, when you saw that sign at Land's End and you knew you'd done not only the run, but you completed this triathlon.
Relief, I think. Just, you know, because I am trying to push it. You know, I'm not in the world of adventure. I'm on the far end, on the athletic end. Even though this run is probably one of the first things I did where there was no real push for time.
Yeah.
I still wanted to try and do a marathon a day. Truthfully, I wanted to just beat Eddie Izzard because everyone was like, oh, you're like Eddie Izzard, mate. I was like, oh, if I don't beat a cross-dressing comedian, then I'm terrible. I didn't beat him, actually. He ran further and faster than me. But I was still trying to push it. I didn't want to just sort of do short days. So it was tough for me. I found it extremely difficult. So by the end, I was just relief. And then I got to the end, and it's all like, oh, you've done it. And then I was like, right, how do I get home? So I had to go around and ask people.
I was going to say,
if anyone was driving back, because I lived, at the time, I lived on my boat in Worcester. I lived on an old World War II gunboat in Worcester for 3 years. I loved it. So I was sort of asking people who had just come to see me, is anyone driving back up north? And someone was going to Bristol. So I sort of, the next day, jumped in with them,
got to
Bristol. And I just remember sort of sitting on the train, still in my running kit, because I didn't have any other clothes, going, wow, that I've just done in like 8 hours what took me like 3 weeks to run. <So annoying.
laughs> Yeah, that's a bit of a wake-up, isn't it, to how quickly you can do these things. And you were followed for some of this with a film crew from Discovery Channel, because this was on Discovery. And, I think you made a good decision not to include that side of it in the book, because it can sometimes really disrupt what we're reading.
Yeah.
But how was it having the film crew? Was it annoying at times? Did they make you do things again for the camera?
Or was it
they follow you, fly on the wall stuff?
Truthfully, I was really nervous about it. When I did my first attempt, I was just by myself.
Yeah.
And when I sort of said I'm going to do it again, someone from Discovery just emailed me and said, oh, that's amazing. Do you mind if we send cameras? And I was really nervous because I thought, I'm a bit skeptical. I thought, they're going to make me do stuff again, and they're going to make me do this and make me do that. And they didn't, actually.
Yeah.
For the most part, I didn't see them. They'd give me a GoPro, and I had a microphone on me.
Yeah.
And they would let me just go off and film myself. And they'd be up on a hill filming me running, and I would hardly even know about it.
Yeah.
And then, obviously throughout the day, they were saying, where are you? Where are you going to go? Because I also, when I get really annoyed with cameras in my face and, tell me how you feel, Sean, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. I'd just take a different route, and they get really annoyed. I would say, well, I'm going to probably stop at this pub, and then they'll come and interview me, or if I'm going to camp out and that sort of thing. But they would get tired, honestly. They would get tired because it's actually quite hard driving for 18 hours a day, if you're driving.
Course.
So actually, a lot of the time, by 6 o'clock, we're like, yeah, my shift's over. The cameraman's like, yeah, my shift's done. See you later. See you tomorrow. I'm off to a hotel. And then I would just go and camp. So actually, I was really happy with the way they didn't really kind of get into my, affect the adventure too
much. And when you watched, did you watch it back as the first thing?
Well, I wasn't going to, but I had to. They made me do it.
Okay.
For fact checking, when you're tired, I might have said the wrong distance or the wrong mileage and that sort of thing.
Did you watch it and sort of go, oh, I can't even remember that happening,
loads of it, But I'm actually glad I watched it back, because the original cut, there's a bit where I did an ice bath in a cold Scottish river, and I got completely naked, and I just presumed it's telly, they'll just blur me out, and then they didn't. I was like, what? I was like, my gran is going to watch this. And
you don't want to be completely naked when you've gone in an icy river.
And I've just been in an icy river. I would have done the cartwheel or something. And then they were like, oh, okay, yeah, you're probably right. And I've been to loads of schools to tell kids to watch it and everything. And they were like, oh, it's after 9 o'clock. I'm like, but people record it. And eventually they're like, okay, Sean, we will blur you out. I'm like, thank goodness. And then I watched it. It's the tiniest blur in the world. I'm like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, should have maybe left
it in. I was like, God, no.
And then that didn't put you off. Like you said, you then did a proper, I say proper triathlon as if that's not proper, but you did a continuous triathlon.
Well, I loved the idea of multidiscipline. I didn't want to just stick to one thing.
Yeah.
So doing the world's longest triathlon just seemed like the next progression for me. Because it was all part of a bigger goal 10 years ago when I was thinking about the Gethin Butler speed record. I came up with this ridiculous concept of, can I get a world record in the world of endurance? In the three Fs of endurance, if you break a world record in a world's first, a world's furthest, and a world's fastest, you kind of become endurance royalty, And I thought, is this even possible? I didn't think it would be possible at all. So when I finished the swim, I ticked off the first F, which is a world's first.
Yeah.
And that was the hard one.
Yeah.
When I did the run, it kind of came a world's first, the length of Britain swim, but that was only real because of the swim, and I'd already ticked the box, so I didn't really count it.
Yeah.
So I sort of went for the second F, which is a world's furthest, And that was the Round Britain Triathlon. The previous record was a woman in Mexico, I believe, who had done one of 3,500 miles.
And how long was yours?
Mine was 4,200, because that was, if you do the coast of Britain with some cycling legs which cut off some headlands, it's a bit shorter, because I think the running route's about 5,500 miles.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit shorter, 4,200 miles.
And which was the hardest, the swim?
The swim, swimming's miserable, to be honest.
You wouldn't do another big swim?
Don't recommend it, no. I would do another swim. I'm trying to get a swim off the ground in Jordan. Does Jordan ever stand here? I need to go speak to them.
I think they might.
I want to swim the length of the Dead Sea for no other reason than I love the title. Shaun of the Dead Sea.
And there's your next book title,
exactly.
Isn't it?
But the Jordanian government don't want to give me permission, so...
Perfect, so that's the next
But I would like to do a warm swim, I think.
But I don't blame you after that.
But that swim, the swim leg was 120 miles, which was shorter, but it was self-supported, so I had to drag a raft, and in the raft was my swim, my food, water, casual equipment. And it wasn't perfect. It wasn't very well designed. In fact, you know military beach landing craft who have that flat front that goes down?
Yeah.
I built it like that. With the sort of the intention was it would go over the waves when I'm swimming, because I thought it would be, if it was,
it would hit them and
and it would go over, but all it would do is when a wave came through me, it would just pull me backwards. It would tug on my hips. So after about, I don't know, 50 miles, I eventually sawed the nose off to make the raft look like every other boat on the planet, which, you know, funny enough, people have worked this out thousands of years ago. And then from then on, it kind of cut through the waves.
It was a lot easier then,
better. But I love self-supported. I love self-supported everything, because you have the flexibility of running to Wales for a pint. You know, you have the flexibility.
Yeah, you can do what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll open it up to questions in a minute. But I would just say, if I think you're a real advocate for someone who wasn't a great swimmer, cyclist.
Well, I'm still not. I've been tested.
Oh, really?
I'm
What
absolutely
sort of tests
bang
that?
On normal.
Oh, okay.
So GSK lab just around the corner.
Yeah.
To have a human performance lab, and anyone has gone in there. Jensen Button, the Brownlee brothers, Chris Froome, Rory McIlroy. They do cognitive stuff. They do power, VO2 max, sweat loss, salt loss, everything. You know.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, I was like, yeah, there's something in me. There's something
in
me.
I'm special.
I'm going to be studied for years. Scientists are going to be like, oh my God, we found a superhuman. Anyway, I went for it's all day, 8 hours.
Yeah.
And right at the end, it took a week for the test to come back. Came back, and I remember the guy who hadn't seen them. He's looking through the 8-page document, and he's just like, and you can see he's just getting disheartened, and he's like, No, mate, you are bang on normal. In fact, I'm probably, literally. In fact, I have a deficiency. I have a salt deficiency where I lose 3 times as much salt as most people.
Well, what that is brilliant, it just shows that if a bang on normal person can do it, we all really should be able to if we want to.
I guess people ask you, why are you able to do this? And I guess I'm just able to suffer for longer.
You know,
physically, biologically, I'm no different.
Yeah.
Although biologically, I'm a good height and weight. I'm quite short and light, so that does help
that
in my favour.
Yeah.
And I have really small feet, so I'm pretty sure that's good for running, just carrying less weight.
on that note, does anyone have a question for Sean?
Yeah.
Roddy, we have a microphone coming to you.
Oh, there we go.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, hello.
Massive... feet. Just two quick questions. You said you had about £15 a day to survive on. Where did you sleep, and did you get offers of accommodation? And the second question is, having done all this massive running around Britain and swimming and cycling, would you consider something like an Ironman, which for you must be a walk in the park?
Yeah. So where did I sleep? In Scotland, you're legally allowed to camp wild anywhere within reason. You know, you have to respect the land. So in Scotland, it was easy. England, Wales, it's technically illegal to camp wild, but is this your book about it?
No. It's always better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Exactly. It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. But respect the land. Phoebe's got a book about it. You know, arrive late, leave early, limit yourself to three or four people max.
Don't light a fire,
take your rubbish out. Yeah, take your rubbish. You know, most people, you'd be fine. And don't sleep in a working farmer's field and things like that. So I was camping wild most of it. But as I said, every time I stank, I would treat myself to a B&B. A friend of mine, Elise Downing, ran around the whole of Britain Took her, I think, a year.
Yeah, and it took her a while,
yeah,
didn't it? Yeah,
I met her on day 150, and it was the first day she'd had to put up her tent in, because she was using warm showers and Couch Surfer and things like that.
Yeah, she said she barely camped at all.
It was amazing.
So many offers, kind people
you
giving
can.
Her food.
I mean, if you wanted to sleep with someone, you know, someone will give you their... It might even just be their floor or their garage or their, you know, their garden. You can definitely get that. I was doing quite late evenings. I would sort of have a last meal at around 7 or 8, and then I quite like running sort of 9, 10, 11, 12 at night. And there's something about running in the dark. I quite enjoy it. You know, you've just got your head torch, you just keep... I don't know, there's something kind of meditative about it, because you're not getting distracted by cars and dogs chasing you and that sort of thing. So sort of staying with people wouldn't really work when I was doing things. And often I'm really up early. And also there's a sort of an unwritten rule. If someone offers you accommodation, the exchange is stories and banter. And often I'm too knackered to want to do any of those. So it's
and
just,
what about the Ironman? Would you do an Ironman?
The Ironman. I say it's too short, which annoys people. So I now said it's too fast. I'm really slow. I'll go for months, but an Ironman's... I'd be interested in a Decker Ironman maybe, but an actual Ironman itself is not really my distance. You know, I'm only good after about 10 days, 2 weeks. Like, that's when I get good. Or other people get worse, but that's why I feel...
So you're slightly abnormal.
Well, no, I have the ability to suffer for longer.
I think we have another question over here.
Hiya. Yeah, just a question about cycling. I don't cycle much now, but years ago when I did cycle, if my legs didn't give way, it was always being saddle sore.
Yeah.
And just hearing about the lengths of mileage that you're doing on a bike.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to have a pretty good saddle, but how do you avoid saddle sores?
Yeah, saddle sores. I've used Brooks saddles, which I really get on with Brooks saddles. Saddle sores can often be the geometry. You know, if you're sitting quite upright, you've got your whole body down on the saddle. In fact, the more racy you are, you've got less weight on your saddle and you can change the pitch of your saddle. For men, you get the one with the carved out bits in the middle, which helps as well. So those things will help, but Brooks saddles. But saying that, on my Europe attempt, which you've just seen that picture, I got really bad saddle sores at the end, mainly because I hadn't washed my clothes enough and the salt buildup started. And once they start, you know, like Atlantic rowers always get those sores. Mm. I was getting similar ones from the salt in my clothing.
Did you get Rupert the Rash? Was that something else?
What rash?
Rupert the Rash.
On the run I got Rupert the Rash on my belly from where my belt buckle rubbed up and down my stomach, but that was completely... I call everything Rupert. I don't know, this fixation with...
Have you tried using... There's a product called Slick Skin? That you spray on?
Yeah.
I don't know if that... I've used that as a woman and I found that can work quite well.
Yeah, it's not... So my saddle sore... You get two types of saddle sores. You sort of get the friction from the clothing and that sort of thing, and then you get the pressure of sitting on the saddle, which almost bruises you in a kind of... so it depends. So the slide stuff will stop the friction
stuff. Will stop the actual rubbing,
but you still might get the bruising and that.
What about padded shorts? I've used them. Yeah. They seem pretty good.
Padded short, for cycling always. I've had to double up padded shorts before.
Have you?
But then you have to lower your saddle by sort of that much just to compensate. So all these little things you learn
tricks.
With experience. I've done 60,000 miles on the bicycle in the last few years. So, you know, you eventually get better and better slowly, you know.
So hopefully you've got plenty to try there. I think there was another question over this way. This gentleman.
Sean, thanks very much. Did you swim the East Coast or the West Coast?
Yeah.
And what would be your ultimate overseas adventure, personally, for you?
So I swam the West Coast because it was slightly shorter in distance and warmer. The East Coast is a few degrees colder. And it was longer to go from Land's End around. My ultimate... I've always wanted to run the length of Africa. I grew up in Africa, and it's kind of been my big goal. But I kind of want to save it, you know. I have this dream, actually. We're expecting our first child in July, and I have this dream that maybe when I'm 60, I have two kids on bicycles and my wife, and I run it and they cycle it. And I think it's important to have something to look forward to in life. And I could have done it a few years ago. I actually, Discovery Channel wanted to do it with me. I was like, if I do it now, then what? You know, so it's kind of nice that I'm saving it. I don't want to be in a rush, you know. I don't want to be you know, a lot of me is a typical millennial, like everyone else. But, you know, I want to sort of not be in a rush to do everything now. So I want to save the length of Africa run for later in life, I think.
Okay, I think we have another
question. Sean. I just want to know, what age were you when you first got interested in all this traveling? Did you join swimming clubs, running clubs?
Okay, which age was I when I started all this? I actually started when I had a midlife crisis at the age of 30. Up until the age of 30, I used to be a school portrait photographer. Do you remember school photo day when you sit in front of the silly background? But I was doing that for nursery schools, so babies up to 5 years old. So I think it was about 10,000 toddlers a year with a puppet in this hand and a camera in this hand. And the amount of times I had to say the phrase, "Who's a silly sausage?" was driving me mad. So I turned 30, and it was my own company. I had 7 staff and everything that should be, in inverted commas, successful. Had an office in North London. I turned 30, and I was just miserable. So I went to my business partner, James. I said, "I want out. I can't do this anymore. Can you buy me out?" And he said, "Yeah, okay, sure. I'll give you a quid." I said, "I'll take it." So he gave me a Jersey pound note because he was from Jersey. And I remember at the age of 30 walking away with a pound to my name. So the first thing I did is spent £4 framing the pound. So minus £3. And my thought process at the time was, I always dreamt I was going to be a National Geographic photographer. I thought I was going to travel the world photographing for all the magazines that are represented here today. But I just got sidetracked by money, by, you know, the wrong dream kind of thing. So I thought, I still want to travel the world, but I have no money, and I have no A-levels. I have no A-levels. I didn't go to university. Photography was a hobby. I just eventually became a job. So I thought, well, if I try and break a world record, not only is that going to put a bit of spice into my life, it's also maybe going to be a way of me getting funding. Because I'd seen people climb Everest and row the Atlantic, and, you know, they had logos on themselves, and it all looked like other people were funding their adventures. So I thought that was my outside-the-box thinking. And then part of it was trying to get the 3Fs, the world's first, furthest, and fastest. So that culmination together made me try and go for world records because I thought I'd get funding for it. And in the meantime, it gave me a new reason to get out of bed every single day. But yeah, I was 30. Before my entire 20s, I didn't own a pair of trainers. and the only thing I did was that Land's End to John O'Groats, which took me 25 days.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so I just want to ask you, obviously we know Jordan is somewhere down the pipeline, you know Africa maybe in your retiring years, but what next? Is there a British thing next? You're going to do something else here?
There's loads still I want to do in Britain, but again, I want to sort of save it for when I have kids and when they grow up.
Yeah.
For now, I've decided 2019 is going to be a charity year, so I'm running the London Marathon for the Scouts, dressed in a big Scout badge that we're designing.
Why not?
And then the big one is I'm trying to raise money for World Bicycle Relief. So kids in Africa, in Zambia especially, can apply for a bike if they live further than X amount of miles from school, and they get loaned this bike. And it's a real sturdy, one-gear, hardcore bike.
Yeah.
If they have an attendance at school of above 90-odd percent or 95%, they get to keep the bicycle at the end. It's a real incentive, and it only costs 95 quid to make and ship one of these bikes out.
Wow.
So I'm going to be cycling, hopefully, the length of the Zambezi River. I grew up on the Zambezi River in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
So it's 2,000 miles from Zambia up into Angola, Congo, Angola, back into Zambia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, maybe Malawi, I think. I can't quite work out whether it goes through there.
Yeah.
cycling the length of the Zambezi River later on this year for charity. It'll all be tracked online, so yeah.
And where can they find out about this?
Probably on my Instagram, Sean Conway Adventure, or on my website, seanconway.com.
Perfect. And if you had to have one final message for everyone who's sitting here who's thinking, yeah, you know, he's made this sound just crazy fun enough, I might want to do it, what would you say?
Don't let the buggers get you down. No, I mean, you know, life's too short to do something you hate. But I'm not an advocate of just quitting your job. You're also a big believer of this. I think just quitting your job and going aimlessly into the world can often kind of lead to more problems in your head.
Yes.
You know, I think you're making the most of downtime, but also just have a goal. Have a physical goal in life.
Yeah.
You know, that really, if you're feeling a bit miserable, it doesn't have to be rowing the Atlantic or anything. Just have a physical goal.
Yeah.
You'll naturally then eat better, get healthier, spend more time outside.
Yeah.
But if you've got a big goal, you know, start planning it now, because when you start, you start getting people on board who support your idea, and you get into what I call the snowball of life.
Yeah.
You know, the more you do it, the more positive people jump on board, and eventually you just land up in a much better place. So,
definitely. Yeah. Positive breeds positive,
yeah,
I think.
Exactly.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
And so thank you so much. I know Sean will be there signing copies of his book on the Stanford stand. I do thoroughly recommend it, and it might inspire you to go and set your own triathlon somewhere
Please.
Else.
Yeah.
Or it might just make you really glad of the comfort of your own warm house as you're reading some of the times that Sean went through.
Yeah.
So thank you, Sean, so much for joining us, and thank you to all for coming
Brilliant.
Here today.
Thank you, everyone,
thank
for coming.
You.
Where am I going? Over there. Okay. So-